Welcome to another in our Jewish Sacred Aging series of podcasts. A part of our podcast offerings this year will be a series of conversations with individuals and colleagues who are seeking to revision how our community deals with the longevity revolution. And to lead us off in that conversation, it is a great honor to welcome to the Jewish Sacred Aging podcast microphone, Rabbi Laura Geller from Los Angeles. Rabbi Geller, Laura, welcome to Jewish Sacred Aging. Very, very nice to have you with us. Thank you for being with us. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, and I'm delighted to be here.
Great. Listen, you are involved in a very, very fascinating project, this Chai Village Los Angeles project with some other colleagues and a community organization. And just let's get right to it. Could you talk to us a little bit about what this project is and a little bit how it came to be a reality?
Okay, so let me start with a little bit of background. Mm-hmm. About 4 years ago, as I was in my 60s, I began to notice that the people that were leaving our synagogue tended to be people who were baby boomers, empty nesters, children had already become bar mitzvah or whatever, and that was the demographic that was leaving the synagogue. At the same time, I also noticed that that was the demographic that was coming to services or to adult learning, whether they were members or not, whether they were in couples. Sometimes one partner came and the other didn't. And it was obvious that there was a time in people's lives when they began to have the time and the interest in asking questions that we might think of as questions of meaning and purpose. So I'm noticing all of that, and I also noticed that the Jewish community was putting all of its energy into 20s and 30s, ensuring the Jewish future, or in frail old age, but nobody was paying attention to this age cohort of people that we would consider baby boomers, people who are, let's say, mid-50s to, let's say, healthy 70s, late 70s. And so we began to pay attention to that cohort in the congregation. We did a series, a listening campaign, where we met with about 250 folks that are in that age cohort and asked them, is this a new stage of your life? I mean, it turns out, as you well know, that social scientists are telling us that people are living 31 years longer than they used to, and those 31 years are not tacked on at the end of a life, but rather a new stage between maturity when we were raising our families and building our businesses or whatever, and frail old age. So you have this huge cohort of people in this new stage, and we wanted to talk to them. So we asked people in the congregation, in house meetings in people's homes, is this a new stage in your life? What keeps you up at night? What are your concerns? And what gets you up in the morning? What excites you? And after a long series of conversations with all of these people, four themes emerged. People were interested in issues of spirituality, questions of meaning and purpose. People were interested in giving back, how they could use their skills and their talents to make a difference in the world. People were concerned about other people that they love, economic, health issues, end-of-life issues, caregiving, boomerang children, grandparenting, that whole series of issues. And people were interested in community, building communities that would help them grow older. Turns out that most people wanted to age in place, stay in the homes that they loved, not move to an age-segregated facility. And we began, after we heard this from people, to do research about what the alternatives are for people who want to age in place. Turns out that there's a movement in the United States called Village to Village, which began about 15 years ago in Beacon Hill in Boston, where neighbors got together and said, we want to stay here. What do we need to do to make it possible for us to stay? What kinds of social capital do we need to build so that neighbors know each other? And what kinds of social services do we need to build so that when I can't stand on a ladder to change a light bulb, I don't have to move to a facility because a neighbor will come and change my light bulb? So this began Beacon Hill 15 years ago. Now there are 200 villages around the country. There are 200 more in formation all over the country. And strangely, as far as we know, there are no faith-based villages, which is a surprise because it seems like an obvious thing for a church or a synagogue to do. In fact, a really good synagogue is, in fact, or at least ought to be, that kind of a village. So given that we knew that this was something that people cared about, we applied for a grant from the Jewish Community Foundation of Los Angeles, a cutting-edge grant, and we were awarded a $200,000 grant over 3 years to imagine creating a synagogue-based village. We reached out to another synagogue, Temple Isaiah, another Reform synagogue that is close to us in Los Angeles, and together began to imagine what it would look like for us to create a synagogue village. So just to be clear, nobody is moving. It's not that we're building a village. This is not co-housing where people get together and actually build something. This is deciding a geographical region, drawing a big circle around that region, and creating within that circle the kinds of connections that members of the synagogue would need to develop with each other in order to be able to age in place. What differentiates our village, which is called Chai Village LA, from all of these other villages around the country is that it is connected to synagogues, these two synagogues, and in order to be a member of the village, you have to be a member of the synagogue.
I think that's really important because I am familiar with the village. In fact, I interviewed the executive director of that on my radio show about maybe 6 months, 8 months ago. And that's really important for colleagues who may be. This is limited to, in other words, this is a benefit. Could you say this is a benefit of membership?
Not only could you say that, but
it is.
We have discovered that people are joining our synagogues in order to be able to be members of the village. And there are people that I know were thinking of leaving the synagogue because they didn't feel that it was particularly, that it provided them what they needed at this stage of their life, who are staying because of the village. So in terms of recruitment and retention, this turns out to be a very significant asset to the synagogue. So here's how it's working. Again, this is different from every other village because is connected to the synagogue. And because it's connected to a synagogue, and in order to be a member of Temple Emmanuel of Beverly Hills or Temple Isaiah, you need to pay membership dues, which are not inconsequential. We decided that in order to join the village, we would keep the membership low. Around the country, the average amount of money to join a village is about $750, $800. That felt like it was too much for people who are already paying synagogue dues. So we kept the dues low. To join our village, you need to pay $100 a year or $150 for households. And you also need to be willing to commit to 4 hours a month of service to the community. So what that means is 4 hours a month, I will be available to take another village member to the doctor or work in the village office or lead a study group or a backyard gardening group or a salon series or, you know, it's a mixture of programs that people, village members do, inviting other village members to do that with them. We're going to the movies Saturday night to see Denial. You know, you don't need a village to go to see Denial, but it's more fun to go to the movies to have a meetup with other people than it is just to go by yourself to the movies. So this is about deepening social relationships in a vibrant and exciting way that is totally ground up. It's not a synagogue programming. It's people deciding, oh, wouldn't it be fun for there to be a biking group that once a week you know, bike the LA River or whatever. So it's that kind of social network, and at the same time, it will provide specific services for people that need those specific services.
So the funding originally, the seed funding came from the foundation, from the Los Angeles Federation, correct?
That's right. And in order for us to sustain ourselves,
right,
after that grant runs out, we are actively seeking other support from, initially from other foundations, but eventually I suspect this will be something that neighborhood businesses will want to become sponsors of, you know. And I am hopeful that we will be able to keep membership low, but at the same time to have enough funding to be able to support the costs of the village, which essentially at this moment is the cost of a salaried professional who is the director.
So let me play this out. So the catchment area, let's say for Isaiah and Emmanuel on the west side of Los Angeles.
Yes.
I'm a member. I'm 80 years old. I'm living, let's say, in the Pico Robertson area. I'm by myself, and my air conditioning breaks. It's August, and it's like 98 degrees, and there's a little Santa Ana bubbling up, and I'm in, you know, so I call the High Village LA director, and then what happens?
Okay, so I'm not sure that we're going to be able to have air condition repair.
All right, well, pick something.
But yes, first of all, a lot of this is done online, and for some of our older members who are not comfortable online, it would be handled through telephone calls.
Okay.
But, you know, there is a kind of network online for members to indicate what their particular needs are. But that 80-year-old would be called regularly by another village member to check in on them.
Mm-hmm.
That 80-year-old would be invited to all kinds of very local activities so that people would know that she or he needed to be invited into an air-conditioned place. We will also have vetted service people so that that 80-year-old can comfortably call a repair person for the air conditioning and know that they're not going to be ripped off. Low-level repairs like fixing light bulbs, like tech help, where village members have the expertise to be able to go into each other's homes and do that kind of support. That will happen. And then in terms of more serious, repair of air conditioning, you know, you would have vetted folks to call.
What about medical stuff, Laura? Is there I know some of the villages do have access in the volunteer network to some preliminary basic medical.
Probably not. Mm-hmm. We're still working out that piece. We spent a year getting set up, and then this summer we launched. The launch, what is active now is the social network piece of it. All these activities that are happening, incredible energy and involvement. It's really quite astonishing. The actual services we're not going to actually kick off until after the 1st of January because we're still working out issues of liability and insurance and all of that kind of stuff. So, I mean, there are interesting questions. So, you need to go to the doctor. You don't drive anymore. I volunteer to take you to the doctor. Do I meet you at the curb? Do I go, or do I go into your house and get you into the car? Do I accompany you to the doctor? Do I sit with you in the doctor's office and take notes so that somebody else is there to hear what the doctor is saying? We're still working all that out. And what's really interesting is that we could not have done this 15 years ago. Because there are these best practices, you know, for more than 15 years, these villages around the country have been wrestling with these same kinds of issues. There is a listserv. There is a listserv. There is a conference. There is all kinds of best practices that we are learning from. And we're very confident that starting January 1st will be, you know, a full-service village where we'll be able to take care of those kinds of needs as well. So what's also interesting from the perspective of the synagogues is, you know, village members need to volunteer 4 hours a month of service. And we decided that that service can also be given to the synagogue. So the other reason why this is an incredible boon for our synagogues is that every synagogue needs volunteers to do stuff like greet people for Shabbat services or work in the Purim Carnival or whatever the volunteer needs of a synagogue are. And now there's a pool of people who are not only theoretically committed to supporting their synagogues, but actually have made a commitment to give at least 4 hours of service a month. So it's really a win-win in ways that are totally exciting and energetic. I mean, the response to this has been stunning. We expected at this point, if we were lucky, that we would have maybe 100 people who had joined between the two synagogues, and in fact, it's about 165 households and individuals. And the demographic is that half of the people are 70 or younger, and half are older. So it's, you know, several generations of people within the village. And all kinds of exciting serendipity. The religious schools in both of our synagogues are excited about the idea of finding a way for the kids in the religious school to be linked with some of the village members. I mean, we don't know how this is going to unfold, but the energy is just overwhelming. At our launch, the mayors of two of the three cities where the geographic area is represented were there at the launch. The city of Culver City, the mayor of Culver City, the mayor of Beverly Hills, and we've begun to work closely with the city of Los Angeles. They're engaged in a effort called Purposeful Aging LA, and they see us as an example of an engaged citizen model that might be interesting for the city to pay attention to. So all kinds of exciting things are happening in ways that we really didn't anticipate.
So let me return to a couple of the themes that you raised. First of all, the spiritual eye. You officially launched this project this past summer, right? In the summer of 2016?
Right, but this project is more focused on the community issue. You know, in our synagogues, both at Isaiah and at Emmanuel, and I'm sure many of the synagogues around the country, there are other kinds of programs for synagogue members that deal with issues of spirituality. Wise Aging, for example, which I suspect you've spoken about on your podcast.
Right, right.
Before.
We interviewed both Rachel and Linda on the radio show about a year ago, right when the book came out.
So in our synagogue, there are wise aging groups. Those right. are not connected to the village.
Oh, so they're not connected. So
they're not connected, although I suspect there will be a wise aging group that will be for village members as well. You know, one of the other ways in which our village is different from all other villages is we are basing our goals and governance programs and services on values that emerge out of the Jewish experience. So if you were to go to our website, you would see explicitly that there are 10 values. Gemilut Chasadim, compassionate action. Limud, lifelong learning, all of these activities of learning that are happening from the ground up. Tikkun Olam, healing the broken world. So this notion of service to the community and beyond. Economic justice, tzedakah, that anybody can be a member of Chai Village if they're a member of our synagogue, even if they can't afford the membership fee. Bikur Cholim, visiting those in need of healing, right? That's going to be, I think, a big part of what the service piece is. Tehillah, being part of a self-governing community. Bryut, health and well-being, you know, we already have walking groups, we have biking groups, this is a Jewish value. Tzelem Elohim, empathy with others. Bayit, the notion of home, aging in one's home is more than aging in place. It means to find a way to create a caring, multi-generational community that knows something about who you are and where you've come from. And finally, the last value is mechadesh b'chol yom, the process of continuing renewal, that we see this as a work in progress, and we see that it is celebrating that human creativity is a renewable resource, that you're never too old to change, to grow, and to learn from each other. So this is intentional. It's there on the website. It's part of the activities that people are doing. But again, it's not a synagogue programming for its members. It is a community that is deepening itself through connections with each other and through caring for each other.
So the genesis of this, and let's go back to something that you alluded to, which I find as I go around the country regularly working in stuff for Jewish Sacred Aging, this, shall we say, hesitancy on the part of the, quote, organized Jewish community to substantively deal with baby boomers and the dynamics of what's happening in our families. Could you sort of like give me your take on, do you see this beginning to change, or do you still see the...
Really, it's starting to change. I mean, it is really, you know, 4 years ago, I mean, you and I spoke about this a long time ago, and we both said how hard it is to get funders to pay attention to this, how hard it is because it's not sexy to imagine dealing with people in our age cohort as opposed to people in their 20s and 30s. It's starting to change now. And I think part of the reason it's starting to change is because of the good work that you've been doing, the Wise Aging. I mean, I think people didn't expect that Wise Aging would have the kind of appeal that it does. I was invited this year to participate in the Jewish Funders Conference, the first time a focus on boomers. You know that the URJ a couple of years ago started to begin to pay attention. Now there's a community of practice.
Right.
But a lot of it is because of the work that you've been doing, the work that Rabbi Dale Friedman has been doing, of course, Rabbi Rachel Cowan, Linda Thal, also a B3.
Right out of New York.
Stuart Himmelfarb and David Alcott. I mean, all of a sudden, all of this, you know, work has bubbled up enough so that people are starting to pay attention. We are already getting a lot of attention for this village. There was a really lovely article that Gary Rosenblatt wrote in the Jewish Week, where he spoke of a conference that in which Richard Siegel, my husband, and I presented this, and we've been getting calls from around the country that, you know, people are paying attention. Synagogues around the country are paying attention to see how they could do something like this in their own communities, because it's such an obvious thing, and it so much serves the needs of people who want to be connected to the Jewish community.
Talk to me a little bit, before we start running out of time, of the value of that concept of community. How important in working with the families, the individuals who are becoming part of Chai Village LA, is this, as we age, as we get a little older, as some friends start to pass away and health issues become more important to us, the value of personal relationships and the value of community?
Well, as you well know, it's huge. One of the things that we learned in our listening campaign is that the things that people are most afraid of as they get older is isolation, invisibility, and becoming dependent. So until 2.5 months ago, I was the senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel. I am now Rabbi Emerita. But who am I when I'm not the senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel anymore? I mean, for so many years, I have been this person, this role. All of a sudden, you know, you get fewer emails, you get fewer phone calls. I mean, it's really interesting when my husband, Richard Siegel, who was the director of the Zelikow School of Jewish Nonprofit Management at the Hebrew Union College, the day after his retirement a year ago, you know, it's like his social capital was cut in half. because he didn't go to school anymore. He didn't have colleagues anymore. He didn't have students anymore. The woman across the street who knew what he wanted, how he took his coffee, wasn't there anymore. You know, isolation is an issue, and we need to really be intentional about creating new networks of friendship. Many of us developed friends when our kids were little. Those friends, some are still in our life, but many are not. My social network was very much determined by work. When I'm not the senior rabbi of Temple Emmanuel anymore, who are my friends? I need to be intentional about creating new friendship networks. So that's about isolation. That's about invisibility. The issue of dependence is a more complicated one. We live in a world where we imagine that there's such a thing as independence and that dependence is a bad thing. But the truth is, nobody is independent. We're all interdependent. And how do we reframe this notion so that interdependence becomes a joyful, life-affirming, renewing notion, as opposed to something that that is frightening? So this is about imagining what it means to be interdependent in a exciting and in a vibrant way. You know, really the issue is that most of us have internalized the ageism of the culture in which we live. The trick is to try to redefine aging from a paradigm of decline to a paradigm of opportunity, without kidding ourselves that, yes, there are losses, right? And in order for me to deal with whatever losses are in store for me, and there are, I am much more resilient if I have a community of people who are there for me. And if I feel that my life has meaning by giving back not only to that community, but to a larger community, that all the skills and talents that I have acquired over all of my years are still valuable, useful, and that I'm engaged in the world. This is a really life-affirming, exciting, and, you know, it's very personal. I mean, I am doing this because it's about me. I have children who love me very much. They don't live in Los Angeles. When I am really in need, they will be here in a minute. I have no doubt about that. But I can't depend on them to come and change that light bulb. I need to find a community that's going to be there for me, and I want to build that community.
Laura, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, perhaps as listening, colleagues listening to this, what's the best way for them to contact you regarding information about Chai Village LA?
The best way, first of all, is to go to the website, chaivillagela.org. A lot of people's questions will be answered. And then the best way to reach me is at rabbigeller@nextstage.org.
Laura, thank you very much for being a guest here on this edition of our Jewish Sacred Aging podcast. It's been great. Continued success. It's a great idea. Really, very happy for what you're doing. And stay healthy and continued good work.
And to you, too. And again, thank you for your leadership. You have been one of the voices that has really kept this issue in the consciousness of the Jewish community.
Thank you very
much.
And as a result,
it's an enriched community. So
thank you.
Shana tova u'metuka, and I look forward to continuing the conversation.
We shall. Thank you very much, Laura, for your kindness. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
To all of you, thank you again for joining us on this edition of a Jewish Sacred Aging podcast. We invite you to review the podcast series by going to our website, www.jewishsacredaging.com. Thank you again. Stay healthy, everyone, and we hope to see you again on another edition of our Jewish Sacred Aging podcast. Take care. Shalom.